It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 27th day of March 2024. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. If you're listening live, you already know that unless you're a newbie. And if you're a newbie, golly Moses, welcome. Yep, HeadOn.live, and that's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the, if you're listening live, part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, multimedia, wacky extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round, and well, whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. But if you're listening live and you pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, well, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, and that would be Routes and Squeaky, who are, along with me, presently capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger, in Oregon. Roger, by the way, will be off to the Oregon coast. That sounds fun. Off to the Oregon coast for tomorrow and Friday's program. So hopefully, Jeremy will be able to get the front porch, have the keys to the front porch and get us into the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Orcs and in which we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Let's see, just a couple of quick program notes. Tomorrow, I have an appointment in the afternoon in Beckley. Hopefully it will not interfere with the program. I really need it not to interfere with the program. But if it does, I'll try to put a note on, I will put a note on social media, but I'm hoping that it doesn't. And then Monday, I have a campaign event that's virtual in nature. And that campaign event will require my presence at 7 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. So we'll be wrapping up the program a little bit earlier than that. So instead of a regular 3-hour program for Moran Monday, and for Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge, we'll be having a 2-hour program. So just make a note of it. In the immediate future, I think that's all there really is going on. I'll let you know as to any other potential interruptions. I know I will be out of town on the 15th and 16th of April. So that's another interruption, or away from the microphone, out of town. You know what I mean. Hi, I'm Robin. It is, at least nominally, prayer meeting Wednesday, but we've got some, what shall we call it, civic engagement to take care of. But before anything else happens, well, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And first and foremost, thank you so kindly to Kat. Y'all met Kat's Keep Robin's Head Above Water Challenge. That's profound and deeply inspiring. And upon finding out, Kat sent that along today. So we've got a fighting chance at paying all the bills, or almost all the bills, by the end of the month. And I cannot tell you how much of a relief that is. Thank you, Kat, so much. Thank you to everyone who responded. Where we stand now, and we're actually $200 ahead of the curve. You know, we try to raise $300 per program. Well, we're at $700. Kat got us all the way down to $700 to go to finish the month of March. And so that's, if we were to raise that today, then we could have two fundraising free programs. If we raise it today and tomorrow, we'll have a fundraising free Friday. And I love fundraising free Fridays because we get to engage in our conversation without me having to interrupt with passing the hat. Thank you, though. Thank you so very kindly, Kat. And as it actually turns out, we have no subscribers on the 27th day of the month. And so it would be great to have new subscribers. And for our dear friend Zed in Iowa, part of the reason we were able to meet Kat's challenge is because of his own challenge, in which five people ponied up at least $22, which Zed will then double. In other words, getting us to that $700 mark. So, fingers crossed, and away we go. And Ralph's has a challenge to start the program. For anybody who kicks in $25, Ralph's will double that $25. This is fun. Based on a list that's out. America's most popular first ladies. Well, there's been a lot of first ladies. Every presidency does not necessarily come with a first lady. There was no first lady in the Jefferson administration, for instance. James Buchanan, America's only bachelor president. Someone else filled in as first lady, but so that's at least two that come to mind. There were more than that. James Buchanan, memorable, of course, for doing next to, and this is a complicated political science term, dick to stop the Civil War as it was brewing and moving toward the secession of the treason states. James Buchanan, however, was not, I mean, he was a bachelor, but like Orville Redenbacher, he had a long-time companion, a man named Rufus King from Alabamistan, who in fact had been an ambassador and a senator, and when James Buchanan was in Congress, lodging was not easily found in the young Washington, D.C., and so members of Congress would sleep two to a bed. Maybe that's where the concept of politics makes strange bedfellows comes from. But it wasn't haphazard for James Buchanan. He and Rufus King made a point of sleeping together. They were only sleeping, y'all, for years and years and years. And King's colleagues in the Congress, I have no idea why they would do something like this. But, well, King's colleagues in Congress referred to him as Nancy. Her name was McGill, and she called herself Lil, but everyone knew him as Nancy. And that's true. And up until some legislation passed in the state of Washington, the county where Seattle is was named after Rufus King. Not Rufus County, but King County, named for him. And, of course, him a vicious believer in the enslavement of other human beings. Eventually, the Seattle City Council, I think it was, or maybe it was the County Commission of King County, changed the name of King County to King County, but said that it would also be named for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Fascinating, ain't it? How did we start on that? Oh, well, whatever. Ralph's challenge, of course, that's what it is. Ralph's is putting up $25. If someone will match it, she'll match back. She'll double your money. Because in this list of the most unpopular first ladies of America, Melania Trump tops that list of the most unpopular first ladies in American history. Which I guess that feels syntactically troublesome. What it boils down to is of all the first ladies in the United States of America, Melania is the most disliked, the least liked, the least popular. And, you know, for good reason. Because remember, Melania Trump is the only first lady in the history of this country. And what's important when I say this, there's no vitriol. There's no slur. These are simple statements of fact. She couldn't even sue over it. Melania Trump is the only first lady in the history of this country ever to remove her clothes for the sexual gratification of complete strangers in exchange for money. No, you know, no nudity shaming. No. It's just a fact. Every other first lady in the United States of America managed to keep her clothes on. Melania, however, in her previous life, removed her clothing and was photographed for the gratification of perfect strangers in exchange for money. Got to be careful when you're talking about Melania, because if you say something like she was an escort or a sex worker, well, she's sued people over that in the past, but she could sue till hell freezes over, and truth would be an absolute defense. Doesn't matter that she didn't know that she would be first lady. She wound up first lady and had a previous history of removing her clothing in exchange for money for the gratification of complete strangers. It's fair, isn't it? So that challenge is out there, and if it gets met, we'll be down to $650 to go in hopes of ending the month of March fully funded. That having been said, there's plenty of stuff out there that could easily lead the program. I want, however, to start with a message that I got from Joy in Ann Arbor, because when the announcement came that the search for survivors of the collapse of the bridge across Baltimore Harbor that was named for one of the most vicious racists and proponents of enslavement in the history of the United States, you know, Francis Scott Key, whose song we sing at every ball game. When the announcement came that the search was being called off for the six construction workers who were filling potholes on the bridge when it went down, the news accounts, most of them, mentioned the fact that they were all from places like Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. They were, in point of fact, migrants to the United States of America. And there's a particular tragedy to this, because they left those countries to come to America in search of what we euphemistically refer to as a better life, and wound up, those six, losing them. Had they stayed in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, they probably would not have died when a bridge collapsed underneath them and they plunged into the frigid waters below. Now, they might have been killed by a roaming right-wing death squad, or, you know, cartels, drug lords, the like. That's probably why they came here, in large part to protect their families. And then they took whatever work they could get in order to support those self-same families. Stewart, not tonight. Stewart, the studio stink bug, has made an appearance. You know, they don't fly very well. They just kind of with their wings, and whither they go, they land. Well, that one landed on me and then fell to the floor, where I must remain cognizant of its presence lest I run myself out of the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. They might be alive today had they never come to the United States of America, because we're not exactly welcoming to brown folks coming from hotter climes. So Joy wrote and said, "I know, I sometimes ask for the impossible. Well, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. No, I'm sorry, the real Robert F. Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy once said, some people see the world as it is and ask why. I see the world as it might be and ask why not." Of course, and by the way, we'll be talking about his disgusting son, Rotted F.K., presently, because Rotted F.K. has named his vice presidential running mate. Here's a hint. It ain't Aaron Rodgers. Jesus. So anyway, Joy said, "I know I sometimes ask for the impossible, and I know the time was short, but I wish someone could explain to me why everyone was warned about the bridge to protect the drivers, but the road workers on the bridge were not warned. I know they carry walkie-talkies and phones. Am I asking too much? Because it nags me that they were immigrants and perhaps in the eyes of some disposable. If there was enough time to secure both ends of the bridge, why wasn't there enough time to get the brown people off the bridge?" I pondered the same question. And, yeah, they likely had walkie-talkies. And apparently other construction workers were waiting at the landed end of the bridge for news of their co-workers. they were, and in death, I will say that they were more American than perhaps millions who were born here. Because a lot of people are born here, and they just take it for granted. Those men had to struggle, had to risk life and limb to be here. And I don't give a tinker's damn what any right-wing POS, any maggot, gut bucket asshole says. They were well and truly American. They were all sons of the red, white, and blue. And I was struck by grief too, Joy, when you get to the podcast. I guess a lot of it, given that that bridge was 1.2 miles long and given the way that it collapsed, and given that there was about 30 seconds of warn time, a human being running, well, the 32nd mile has not yet been achieved, nor the 32nd half mile. A 40-yard dash, 120 feet, is impressive. But I hope they can be remembered. And I hope they can be grieved as the workaday, as the what Shakespeare called the heroes of the working day that they were. Their death is a reminder of something that Boss Man Wayne once reminded me of. He said, you know, we celebrate Labor Day, and as a proud union man, Boss Man Wayne would talk about how unions brought us the 5-day, 40-hour work week, how unions brought us the weekend, and how Labor Day originally was a celebration of union labor. But noted in teaching me, and he taught me so very much over the 20 years, 21, 22 years that I knew him. We met, by the way, at an anti-Iraq war peace gathering. We met almost weekly back then as dim leader pounded the bloody tattoo of war against the innocent people of Iraq. That's how we became friends. Because I've never known a better liberal, better progressive than Boss Man Wayne. And while I expected him to pass, I wasn't prepared for having to think every time I think of him, having to think, well, he's not here anymore. No man is an island, no woman either. As John Donne said, ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. But Boss Man Wayne taught me, that another purpose of Labor Day, the first weekend in September, and Wayne was born on Labor Day, fitting. But that Labor Day was a day for remembering the sacrifices labor makes every year. Because work is honorable, as he said, but a lot of work is dangerous and destroys the body over time. And so Labor Day is a day for remembering things like the Haymarket Massacre, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire, General Motors and Henry Ford, and the auto workers, and the Reuther brothers, and Ford and General Motors' wars against the UAW and their workers in general. And for remembering the lives that are lost in any given year by people just simply trying to earn enough money to support their families. I hope that Maryland, being a blue state, has at least halfway decent workers' compensation programs that will provide meaningful relief for these men's families. But the fact of the matter is, we lionize cops, for instance, and juries let them walk when they say, oh no, I had to blow the brains out of the black man from 40 feet away because I was in fear for my life. When in fact we armor them up and we give them guns and tasers and pepper spray and clubs. But the men on that bridge in Baltimore had nothing with which to defend themselves. I wonder going forward if we will provide people filling potholes on bridges with, personal flotation devices. Seems like that might actually make sense. But they deserve to be memorialized with both honor and love. As to the Key Bridge, Ron in Raleigh says, someone on Fox said that DEI was the proximate cause of the bridge collapse and that the bridge was destroyed so that a new bridge could be built but not named after Francis Scott Key because of his racism. Well, yesterday, on this very program, I said, maybe it would be good karmic practice not to name the next bridge after a vicious, vulgar racist like Francis Scott Key. And I'll wear that badge proudly. But yeah, I had the story that, you know, some jackass, and I think that person was in Utah, said that DEI caused the bridge to collapse because since the harbor commissioner was an African American woman, that there's no way she could be competent to do her job and was a diversity hire. And for my part, I hope that maggot fillets an entire nest of murder hornets in hell. Because I'm mean that way. So it's no answer, Joy, but I at least wanted to address your question. Joy has such a good heart. So there's that. But the other thing that makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits is something that I saw shortly before airtime. And this is disgusting. We all saw back on January the 6th, 2021, a treasonous maggot by the name of Kevin Seafried from Laurel, Delaware. Delaware. Not a Confederate state, I might add. parading through the Capitol with the devil's diaper on a flagpole on his shoulder. Kevin Seafried did something that not even the Confederate armies were ever able to do, even at the height of their prowess. They displayed their rotten banner in the capital of the United States. Well, that dirty son of a bitch was doing some time in the clink. Until a maggot judge named Trevor McFadden said he shouldn't. Kevin Seafried, along with his awful son Hunter, now there's a Hunter we can excoriate, were among the very first insurrectionists, the very first domestic terrorists to enter the capital of the United States with Pappy proudly carrying his filthy, vulgar, treasonous Confederate flag. And so now the Supreme Court of the United States has telegraphed to courts, as well as January 6th domestic terrorists already due in time, that maybe there was a problem with using the obstruction of an official proceeding charge. That charge has been used against hundreds of the domestic terrorists who entered the Capitol on January 6, 2021. But at least four members of our most puissant Dred Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties have said that maybe that's not an appropriate charge for somebody who was merely trying to overturn constitutional governance in the United States of America. And I read that and I just wanted to throw up. It made me physically ill. They went in to disrupt the Electoral College certification, but the Supreme Court of the United States isn't sure, at least four of them, whether that Electoral College certification was an official proceeding of the United States, and whether a domestic terrorist attack against the Capitol where it's taking place was an obstruction thereof. And I confess, I'm a little triggered by this. Who am I kidding? I'm a lot triggered by this. I'm disgusted by this. So yesterday, Judge Trevor McFadden, a MAGAT appointee from 2017, who has been working mischief on the bench in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia since the very moment that he lied when he took his oath of office, has been working to undo the nefarious work of his master's sycophants. Yesterday, McFadden said that Seafried can be released while he awaits the decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. Made a specific finding, and this takes some doing. Trevor McFadden made a specific finding that Seafried doesn't pose a flight risk Well, with an ankle monitor, he might not. But the one that made me want to eat dirt and run rabbits was his finding that Siegfried is not a danger to his community. How is the commission of an act of domestic terrorism not a danger, never mind his community in Delaware, but to the entire nation? Maggot Judge McFadden went further and said it's not for the purpose of delay, the appeal, and that the appeal raises a substantial question. And that the answer to that question is likely to result in a reversal, a new trial, a non-custodial sentence, or a custodial sentence that will have ended by the time the appeal is decided. Reading the minds of our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, McFadden further found that the Supreme Court, if it takes up his challenge, may rule in Siegfried's favor, or in Fisher's favor. Fisher is another domestic terrorist. It will almost certainly mean that Siegfried's analogous conduct didn't violate the obstruction law, saying, in that case, Siegfried will be left serving only his sentences for the four misdemeanor convictions, but by the time his appeal has concluded, those custodial sentences will have likely concluded. And then he said, but the sentences for the misdemeanor charges would be over by May the 31st of this year, and that he should be released on or around that date, ruling, and said that a one-year sentence is likely adequate for domestic terrorism. God damn, this pisses me off. And there's other stuff to get into this evening, but I'm really tired of the kid gloves with which we treat these cut purses and highwaymen, foot pads, hard cases, and dead enders. The Department of Justice, as headed by Merrick the Meek, one attorney Matthew Graves said last week that, well, okay, even if our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties side with the Fisher defendant, that the government could then in turn request consecutive instead of concurrent sentencing so that he would at least do some damn time and wouldn't wind up with a shorter prison sentence if the obstruction charge is overturned. This is Trevor McFadden telling the domestic terrorists of Maggotville to get ready to do it again next January. Y'all, the Republic remains at risk, and they're not going to do it again. They're doing it again. And they're telling us they're doing it again. I'm disgusted by this. I'm sickened by this. And you know what else? I'm at a point where, and if you recall the recordings of this program all going all the way back to January 6, 2021, and the subsequent conversations we had after the domestic terror attack of January 6, 2021, I said that there needed to be a special counsel appointed with the power to handle all of these cases, and that these cases should be treated as deadly serious acts of treason. Because they were. But no. Merrick the Meek went light on him. Obstruction of an official proceeding. And now, this is where we are. And for that, for the terrorism they perpetrated, it may turn out that they aren't even punished. I'm mad. I'm furious. And I'm sick at both heart and soul and stomach for our republic and for every human being who has ever offered up body and or soul for its defense. This is Trevor McFadden fairly urinating and defecating on every grave in Arlington National Cemetery and every national cemetery across the United States, on every Union grave at Gettysburg and at Antietam and at Shiloh. Shiloh's always stuck with me because it's in southwest Tennessee. And there are row upon row of headstones for young men who marched there from Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan and Iowa. Farm boys who answered the call of their government, their parents perhaps being the first to come to this country, and gave what Lincoln called the last full measure of devotion. And Trevor McFadden has dropped trowel and shit all over their graves. May as well have crossed the Atlantic and done the same at Normandy. I mean, I when I first read this, I got from zero to angry tears in almost no time at all. How dare him? How dare him? God damn, I hate fascists.
Oh, but he was on the law review at the University of Virginia.
Didn't learn much, dipshit.
Ah, but he was a cop in Fairfax County, Virginia.
So much for upholding the law. Someone's on the stress line. And I usually go for the first hour, but I'm going to, before I start just Tourette swearing, I think I'm going to go to the stress line, see what we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I am so glad you brought up the Fisher case because I'm scared to death about what the Supreme Court could do with that case. Hi, it's Darlene from Connecticut. Roxanne, how you doing?
I'm good, Darlene. How are you? Thanks for,
good.
Thanks
Thank
for,
you for taking my thank, call.
Oh, thanks for joining me out here on the ledge.
I'm hanging off the ledge. I've been hanging off the ledge for a while, and I meant to call you to talk about this about a week or two ago, but I have a little bit of, the dogs are quiet right now, but once the evening hits, I'm running ragged to take care of them, but I have a breather, but I am very worried about the Fisher case, and there was a pretty good interview that Michael Popak from Legal AF did with Judge Luttig a couple of weekends ago on a Sunday, you know, and we talk about how C.J. Roberts is the smartest Republican.
Yes.
Luttig is right up there, too. Luttig, I think, is just as brilliant, if not more so, because he can read, like, he calls bullshit on C.J. Roberts. So Luttig is at least more for good whereas C.J. Roberts is an evil. He's evil. So first of all, you know how Judge Ludig talked, and you are waiting for the Colonel.
And the next word. Yeah, it's like something out of the it's like something out of the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, where he has measured out his words in coffee spoons.
Now, but I like a man that gets the gears in my head working, and man, did he ever do that, because he was talking about the Anderson decision concerning the Colorado's attempt to remove Trump from the ballot. And he, in his very intellectualized, of course, his intellectual way of saying, you know, said to Michael Popak, this was an extraordinary decision. And he, you know, and in other words, it's his way of saying this was bullshit. So the thing that was, I was like, oh my God. And just shows how brilliant C.J. Roberts is, but he didn't fool Judge Ludig, because they brought up the whole thing about how, Roberts was talking. Roberts did a smoke and mirrors. He did a sleight of hand. He did a red herring. He got us looking at the shiny little ball over here in this one corner, while the real thing that was happening was way over on the right. And that is that he pointed out that he agreed with C.J. Roberts that the 14th Amendment, yes, it is in fact about restricting states' rights. He said, I would tell C.J. Roberts, yes, it is. It's about restricting the states from putting insurrectionists on the ballot. And Michael Popak was like, and of course, the way Ludig laid it out, it took him about 10 minutes to lay it out. But he came up with that final zinger. It is, yes, it is about restricting the states. It's about restricting states from putting insurrectionists on the ballot. And I was like, holy shit. And Roberts had us looking at a different type of angle on these restrictions. So he pulled the wool over our eyes. He also got very animated over Justice Kagan and her. And Kagan, I lost a ton of respect for her, because the hyperbolic way in which the performative hyperbolic way in which she asked the question about, well, why should we let Colorado choose the next president of the United States? And he got really animated.
Yeah, that was shitty. To use the language with which most Americans are familiar, that was shitty and smug and condescending.
Performative and planned. Roberts put her up to it. She wasn't even a good actress on it, really. It was so hyperbolic and so poorly delivered. It was performative. This shit is planned out from start. He did talk also about how the Supreme Court nullified Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. They nullified it. And what that says is a couple of things. First of all, to me at any rate, here we have the Supreme Court is doing Trump's bidding. They're changing, altering, and eroding the Constitution before our very eyes. It's not in a Trumpian fashion, in the sense of, you know, on day one, I'm going to be dictator, and I'm going to get rid of the Constitution. Now, the Supreme Court under C.J. Roberts and the other four or five, six of those idiots, they're or five of those idiots. They're all, they're doing it slowly, methodically, with these asinine decisions, and we are the frogs in a slowly boiling pot of water. You know, I think back to the image of an Inconvenient Truth. You know, the little cartoon frog that Al Gore had there, and the, and we don't realize, you know, because we're in the pot of water, and it's slowly increasing, increasing, and it's starting to boil more and more and more. That's us. It's happening right before our eyes, and it's the Supreme Court that's doing it. So not only did they nullify Section 5, they abrogated or abdicated, or however you want to put it, their responsibility under Madison, Marbury versus Madison, to interpret the Constitution. They changed it. They got rid of it. That section, Section 5, amongst all the other crazy things, the misinterpretations of the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, everything. It's happening slowly and methodically. So what really scared me, also got me thinking vis-a-vis Fisher is, and they didn't get to this point because then Popak wanted to get his take on, Judge Luttig's take on what's happening down in Miami with Judge Eileen Karen. And he basically said, I was kind of surprised, but Judge Luttig said that he really has not been following that case. He's aware of what happened, you know, the first time these the classified documents case came before and she got smacked down by the 11th Circuit. But he said, I really have not been following that fact pattern that closely. Because what Popak was trying to do is trying to advocate to get Luttig to write an amicus brief to Judge Karen's court there to counteract the crazy amici curiae briefs that were written by that Stephen Miller and other of the Trump stooges. So he did say that it is extremely difficult to remove a trial court judge. It is extremely difficult to do that and unprecedented. So, again, he doesn't know the fact pattern, but that's counterbalanced by his knowledge of the legal system, the judicial system, that it's very difficult to remove a trial court judge. So getting back on track, they didn't really go this far, but Here's my fear. Taking into account what was stated by Judge Luttig, his interpretation of what happened in Anderson, I am fearful that Anderson laid the groundwork for a very bad decision in Fisher. Because if the Supreme Court is saying, and it's like, you know, this just shows what an evil genius C.J. Roberts is.
Yeah. See, that's one thing that's worth remembering, Darlene. We tend to think of the Chief Justice, and wrongly, he's the Chief Justice. He's the Chief Justice because he's best suited to the job and, you know, he's brilliant. The Chief Justice is first and foremost a political appointment. Only a president can name a Chief Justice. They can't choose a Chief Justice from within their own body. And so he was put in that position by W for a damn good reason. He's a firewall. Do you agree?
Yeah, yes, I do, but this firewall is going to... It's going to, I don't know if it's a, he's going to set shit on fire.
Yeah.
Because if the Supreme Court is saying in Anderson, goodbye, Section 5 of the 14th. Hello, we're not going to interpret anything. We've just, you know, in effect, nullified Section 5, and we're looking at Congress. You need to come up with a batch of laws to define an insurrection, to define insurrectionists, to do all of that, then where does that put things when the Fisher case comes before them. Because doesn't that essentially give the court, the Supreme Court, the ability to say, look, you went with this Enron-type argument that there was a disruption of an official proceeding, which was a corporate thing. This was for corporations. Because technically, the DOJ, they really didn't have anything to work with specifically that was on point. Right?
Right.
So if they're saying that it's up to Congress to come up with the architecture, a framework of laws to deal with insurrections and insurrectionists, then where does that put the January 6th criminals, terrorists, whatever we call them? So to me, I think they could turn around and say, These were improper prosecutions, or they could maybe strike down anything on the Enron bit. They, you know, there would be other charges, obviously, that they would have to serve their terms on. But I'm wondering if that could cut back on the Proud Boys or whatever the leaders that were put in for 20 some odd years. My fear is this decision is going to, I'm fearful that they're going to rule in a way on Fisher that's going to get these assholes released just in time for our November 2024. Exactly. And what do they care? Because they've got federal marshal protection. They're going to be viewed as heroes. Those insurrectionists are not going to go after them. There was a point made by George Conway wherein he said that he thought that the decision or the concurring opinion by Amy Covid Barrett, where she excoriated the three ladies on the court, was actually a signal that she's scared. You know, we have to tamp down the rhetoric here, or however she put it, because we're in a political season, and she showed her cards. And Conway was saying that this shows she's afraid. She's afraid of the backlash. She's afraid, my guess is the other ones on that court are worried. Judge Luttig, he said that was the most ridiculous. Now, Popoff said it was like a promotional ad for the Supreme Court. That's what he called what she did. Judge Luttig said it was a ridiculous comment. It was unnecessary, and the three ladies on the Supreme Court were not strident in their concurring opinion. They were not. There was no stridency there.
No, I didn't take it that way either, Darlene. That wasn't strident. That was straightforward, but it's a typical.
No.
It's a typical. I mean, come on. Hysterical woman.
But there's something going on with interpersonal, emotional, psychological, whatever the hell's going on within the body of the SCOTUS. There's something going on between all of them, with, you know, amongst them. I think they're feeling the pressure. And he's also not sanguine. I mean, Judge Luttig said there was no reason for the Supreme Court to take up the immunity case. There was absolutely no reason for them to do that. And he said that he's not optimistic, because Popoff's trying to find something. He's trying to find any silver lining, because he said, well, it's a narrow issue. You know, they're going to look at it, you know, narrowly as a narrow issue that they've defined. And he goes, well, Luttig is like, that's no consolation, because there have been plenty of times when they've had narrow issues to look at, and they have gone far beyond what they should have. Not only like recently in Anderson, but also when you think of Citizens United, they way overstepped the bounds of what they were supposed to look at there. That was a huge one. And I'm sure there's more that can leap to your mind. I'm not thinking straight on that right now, but Citizens United was the one that leaped to mind. So I'm very worried about Fisher. That's coming up. And I'm afraid that they're gonna set these fuckers free. They're gonna legitimize.
Well, I think it's six of one and a half dozen of another, Darlene. Everybody charged with obstruction of an official proceeding, convicted of that. Everyone convicted of it's a mouthful of a charge, but interfering with the administration of justice. Those people are going to walk, which makes it much easier, should Nitwit Nero get back into office, for him to pardon, say, Stewart, you'll shoot your eye out, kid, Rhodes, bang. Enrique Tarrio, and anybody who's gone up for a substantial sentence. That's a much, much smaller handful than the people who were convicted under these obstruction of an official proceeding charges, which was a bullshit pusillanimous charge in the first place. As I was saying before I came to your call, I feel like.
Then what do we do?
Well, it's not double jeopardy.
How do we get them in the slammer then?
It is not double jeopardy to turn around and charge them with fucking insurrection. See, that's the whole thing. We were trying. The DOJ of Merrick the Meek was trying to be gentle and go for what they thought was an easy win.
But what laws are on the books for insurrection?
Sedition.
I thought the Supreme Court was essentially saying in Anderson that Congress needs to get its act together and come up with laws to address this for the future.
Well, but no, that's relative to the 14th Amendment.
They changed the meaning. They nullified Section 5, Robin.
I get it, but the thing is, Section 5 is not Section 5 is not the operative force. And if Billable Rick's out there, I'd really welcome a little clarity from him. But Section 5 is not what gives power to the government to charge for acts of insurrection or sedition.
Right. But didn't they say in Anderson that it was up to Congress? Didn't they essentially say that it was up to Congress to come up with something? I thought that they did. Maybe
only,
I'm wrong.
Only relative. The way I read it was what they were saying was relative to the specifics of Section 3. But the problem with the way it was written was that it might easily be extended in another case to something besides Section 3. And that was where the danger lay. I could be entirely wrong.
Well, they know Congress is impotent at this point, right? I mean, and I can totally hear Alito saying, well, that's not our problem. We're in a Kobayashi Maru situation because there are insurrectionists in Congress.
Oh, they're yes.
And they're not going to agree to anything that could put them, put their own asses in the slammer. So that's my concern. I think, you know, I still maintain that Anderson is going to lay the groundwork for Fisher. That's my concern. It's all connected.
And I think it may very well.
Roberts is
an evil genius.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they have a blueprint, right? I mean, they go into their session every year, knowing what cases are coming up. Now, there are some surprises here and there, but they have a lot of control power over determining what they want to take. And if they don't like how something is framed, they'll even, you know, throw out hints that they want a redo, or presented differently, or a different question, or what have you. So that's what I wanted to say. Like I said, I'm glad you brought up Fisher. I am worried. I think they're going to find ways to mitigate these sentences.
They're showing themselves. They're showing themselves willing to do Trump's bidding. Let's just make it clear. And those four are
exactly.
Those four are what? Roberts, Beerboof and Brat,
Alito,
Sammy Bad Breath, Fappy, and Gorsuch. Or is Roberts not one of them? Is Roberts not one of them? But no, Roberts has to be one of them. If it's four,
he's from the old guard, but you know, he's got to be. He's got to show he has some control over this court. And he doesn't have much. But I am fully coming of the opinion that this is complicity on the part of the, you know, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, because it's wrong. And this is an unconstitutional court. And the decisions that they make fly in the face of the Constitution. They're destroying the Constitution slowly over time before our very eyes. To me, it would seem incumbent upon them to speak out. But they're not. Because let me tell you something, this is a good gig. You have this job where you're getting almost $300,000 a year. Book deals.
That Fappy can't get by on.
That. Right, that he apparently can't get by on. And we're paying them $300,000 a year to ruin the social fabric and political fabric, constitutional fabric, everything of this nation. There's something wrong about that.
There's something? There's everything. I mean, there's everything wrong. Yeah, you're getting...
And they should be speaking out. Go ahead.
They should, yeah. And, well, did you see the article from Stephen Breyer in the last couple of days?
I saw him on Your Filthy Morning Habit. It comes up on my YouTube feed. He should have been a voiceover artist, man. He's got a good voice.
Oh yes, he does.
I heard aspects of the book that he's selling, which he did after he left. Right? I don't know if he sold any books like *Flynn Was Out of My Car* while he was sitting justice. Maybe he did. I don't know.
Well, I thought his choice of words, Darlene, was profound. He did an interview with Politico on yesterday, and he said that this court is at risk of creating what he called a constitution that no one wants if they continue down this bullshit, my word, originalist path.
Yeah.
He blistered
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And it's not even... Yeah.
He
and
said,
it's not even original.
He said he and Fat Dead Tony used to get into it and said... If you use originalism to interpret the Constitution or the statutes, we'll have a Constitution that no one wants, because the world does change, not necessarily so much in terms of values, but certainly in terms of the facts to which those values are applied. And, you know, a great example of that is there's a big difference between the right to keep and bear a muzzle-loading musket versus the right to keep and bear... an AR-15 with a 100-round magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said that there probably should be he would not object to an age limit for the Supreme Court. I don't think that's harmful, he said. If you had long terms, for example, they'd have to be long. Why long? Because I don't think you want someone who's appointed to the Supreme Court to be thinking about his next job. And so a 20-year term, I don't know, 18, long term, fine. I don't think that would be harmful. I think it would have helped in my case. It would have avoided for me going through difficult decisions when you retire. What's the right time? And so that'd be okay. You know, the minute you go on the court, you know, I'm here for 20 years. But maybe there's something, and when I saw all this, Darlene, one of the things I thought was, I agree, but by the same token, maybe he's going at it from the wrong direction. Maybe there should be a minimum age limit so that you're not putting the judicial equivalent of a hormone-driven, horny teenager like beer boofing brat on the court. Does mm-hmm. does that carry any water for you?
Well, beer boofing brat, I mean, he was circulating or articulating through the system around the same time I was. We were in the same area, actually, in Connecticut. I was going to Fairfield. He was at Yale.
Oh, by the way, we have some breaking. You know, we have some. No, he's not a spring chicken. He just has the frat boy mindset of one. And, you know, same with Gorsuch, frat boy. My fraternity, no less. There is some breaking news. And again, out of your neck of the woods, Holy Joe Liar Man is no more. He's pining for the fjords. He's singing with the Bleeding Choir Eternal. So, sore loser man, Joe Lieberman. In the immortal words of Jesse Lee Peterson. Yeah, in the immortal words of Jesse Lee Peterson, he did.
He died? Oh, I sound like my mother.
God rest her soul. Yes.
She died? She died? Wow.
Yeah, he was 82 and he fell and the curtain, horrible way to go, and the curtain rang down on Holy Joe.
He fell. Wow. Well, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but you know, that way going. But wow. He died.
And there's a lot of people saying,
like,
yeah, there's a lot of people saying, well, you know, I really respected him when he was in the Senate, and I told him I didn't agree with what he was doing with no labels and third, you know, the third eye blind or whatever. But you know, he was a good and moral man.
It'll be interesting to see what Ned Lamont does. Governor Lamont.
Yeah. Well.
That whole thing takes us back to, you know, and periodically I run into Governor Lamont. Nice guy. He is a very nice man. But he waged a pretty good campaign against Lieberman back in the day over the idiocy of the Iraq War. However, you know, Lamont said he did not think that Bush should be impeached because we were, that's the point we were talking about, but I was very disappointed. And then when he took the nomination in the primary over Lieberman formed the Connecticut Party or something to still run.
And which I don't think you should. I don't think you should be able to lose a primary and then turn around and form a third party to get you on the general ballot.
And neither did I. Neither do I.
Did Connecticut fix that?
I doubt it because I've never heard anything on it. I'm, you know, to be honest with you, I find Connecticut stuff pretty boring. Politics, I'm more into the national stuff and some of the local stuff if I like it or not. Before I get up, I have to tell you about a local story that's going to really upset you. I was unhappy about it at the time. So I attended another political, it was a question and answer thing here in my town for a local senator who was a Democrat, who held her position for many, many years until this young upstart Republican, who's a real asshole, really gave her a challenge one year, and she barely won by a couple of hundred votes. And then she decided to retire. But I asked this woman during this question and answer, and it might have been in the same one where Ned Lamont was. He zipped in, gave a speech, answered some questions, and left. I asked my local senator, I said, I don't feel that it's right or fair that Joe Lieberman, who lost the primary, should be permitted to run under a different party name. He should bow out. And she said, well, I don't necessarily agree because one of us could be in this position at some point in the future too. And I'm like, what? That's what she said.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh. And I lost all respect for her as well. She knows who I am. I know her. Say hello to each other once in a while. But I thought that was disgraceful.
I agree.
So guess who she voted for when she went into the booth?
Do we have any doubt?
Sure. Yeah.
By the way, you got a note from Tracy, who said, good on you, Darlene. And by the way, it's so nice to hear two smart women talking politics and using their critical thinking skills. I love that. Thank you, Tracy.
Oh, thanks, Tracy. And, well, I could be wrong. I could have this all analyzed incorrectly, but
I don't think you do. I don't think you're ever going to go wrong. Anticipating this, you're never going to go broke betting that this Supreme Court will do the worst possible thing it can do. And by the way, I've had some notes come in from Matt in San Francisco, going all the way back to talking about the guys on the bridge. And by the way, two bodies have been recovered from Baltimore Harbor now. I just saw that come across my feed. It just broke my heart. I'm looking real quick just to see if we can say their names. Eight construction workers were believed to be mending potholes when it fell. Miguel Luna, a father of three, and Maynor Suazo, a father and entrepreneur, both from Guatemala. There are two other Guatemalans, 26-year-old, a 26-year-old from San Luis Petén, and a 35-year-old from Camotan, Chiquimula.
Some of the missing are also Mexicans, according to the Mexican embassy.
They're all in the graveyard shift or whatever it was, so to speak.
Unfortunately, yeah. Because
but that's unfortunately what it was through and through.
Because it's good money. It's good money.
Of course, they're put on late night, late hours. And quite honestly, they're going to have to reassess a lot of things.
Well,
is it appropriate for
you're nominally at lower
that large to be in a small port like that?
It's
going under a bridge like that. Why was there any protective?
It's not a small harbor though. It's one of the largest on the east coast.
Around the
Darlene, it's one of the
columns that the ship ran into.
Well, the thing is,
it didn't take long for. I mean, that was instantaneous. That bridge collapse was just. It was so quick, but you could see it. You're watching all the cars going by. They're speeding pretty fast over that bridge, and then all of a sudden the cars stop. So, but there were some vehicles on there, I think, maybe in an opposite lane or something. But
it looked like it. It looked like there were. But bear in mind, Baltimore Harbor is not a small harbor.
Well, that area looked pretty tight, though. That area that ship was maneuvering in and having to go under the bridge, that looked like a very tight area. I'm talking about that particular section that we all saw where the accident happened.
And I get the idea that, I mean, every harbor has dredged channels. And what had happened is it had gotten out of its channel because when it lost power and lost the rudder.
There was smoke in the back, too.
Yeah, that was where it wound up. It shouldn't have been anywhere near what do you call it? Pylon? Footer? It shouldn't have been anywhere near it, but, you know, it's the ocean. And there are currents. And I have a feeling that the reason it got so close to where it hit was because of drift. Or if they were maneuvering at the time when the steering went out.
Container ships. I mean, I've seen things on YouTube and stuff where those container ships are out in the ocean. There's like these large rogue waves. I guess they call them rogue waves.
Yeah.
And those container ships, they seem overloaded to begin with. They're piled up. I mean, each container that one of my dear friends who's a world traveler, he and his wife, they basically had all of their belongings in a container. And those containers are 40 feet long. One of those containers is 40 feet long. It looks like there's 50 to 100 of them piled up on the bridge of these container ships. I don't know how that's permitted. I don't know how the hell they do it. I don't know how those ships can maintain stability. I would imagine it would, they must have calculations that are just fine tuned. But to me, it just seems like you're just asking for a shit ton of trouble, with the way these things are permitted to,
You ever seen a cruise ship?
To sail. Yeah, it's a similar kind of a thing. Yeah. I mean, deck after deck after deck.
And they look like they're so top heavy, there's no way they can avoid capsizing, but they've got some sort of stabilizer system on them. I assume the other ship, these container ships do as well, but they're unnerving to behold. But I wanted to share a couple of notes coming in. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa, being Brother Deacon Asa, says, "Oh, how lovely to hear from Darla." Go ahead.
Yell it. Go ahead. Yell it, Brother Deacon Asa.
I'm a fighting word.
Yeah, I know. I like it. Go for it, sister. I had a note.
Not call me Darla.
You're not an alumna of the Little Rascals, damn it.
Hell no. I liked her. She was a cute little girl.
Yeah, she was. Except for that unfortunate name. But I had a note from Matt in San Francisco. And as to the road workers, he said, I thought the same thing, felt the same. Felt the same feelings. I guess living with three immigrants and seeing them all go through the hoops to become citizens, it does sort of make you realize that some people in this world dream of coming to America and becoming an American citizen. Why? Well, believe it or not, being an American citizen makes traveling the world a lot easier. Individual people in other countries may or may not like you, but when they stamp your passport, the authorities treat you with respect. They know if anything goes awry during your stay, the full weight of the American government will demand and get answers. Being an American citizen is a badge of honor when they return to their country of origin as well. Sort of an unspoken one up on their fellow countrymen and women. And believe me when I say, they vote. Now, I can just speak for my immediate family members in my household, but they vote with a pride that brings forth a lump in my throat and water to my cynical eyes. Now, I was raised by an activist. One of my earliest memories, maybe 4 or 5 years old, was playing in mock tiger cages in Golden Gate Park as my mother was a part of a protest against the Vietnam War. She didn't want her sons to be drafted into what she saw as an unjust war. And as a young adult, I engaged in politics because my life and the life of my contemporaries depended on electing people that would say AIDS and fund research. So I know a thing or two about being a patriotic American. But not until I witnessed folks who traveled thousands of miles to realize the dream of being an American citizen did I fully understand what it means to be an American. May the families of those workers be surrounded with love and support. May they receive every positive thing this country can provide. And Matt continued and said, once we started our conversation, here comes the judge. I agree 100% with everything being said. Have you seen Justice Breyer on these talk shows? Matt reminded me of that. Hawking his new book, put aside his habit of taking long meandering trips around a garden to get to the point. It seems to be a judge thing, which most times is softened to the consistency of grits. He's basically saying textualism is a fraud and it's being used to erode the pillars of democracy. Now, I haven't read his book, and I'm not sure if I could get through it due to his habit of coming to milquetoast conclusions and never pushing things far enough to say, these religious fuckers are crazy, and they're destroying America. Breyer is very careful not to go too far in order to protect the court, the institution, and he even won't answer specific questions as if he's still going to get a case before him, so he can't comment. I mean, come on, you're 85. You're retired from the court. Let loose and say what you think. Damn the torpedoes. Anyway, we really have to do something about the court. It may take 50 or 60 years, but if things don't start heading back towards sanity, the handmade costume company stock I bought is going to be worth millions, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. And then when I mentioned Joe Lieberman, Matt just said Lieberman's dead. Well, that's just the news I needed to pump me up to get to the gym. I'm so proud of you for going to the gym. Share some of that motivation with me, would you please? But we were talking about Lieberman falling. Now this is personal, but this is weird. And I want to make sure that I'm not misunderstood in this. When I said that I was running for office, I mentioned that I have primary competition. A well-known lawyer in this county who has had a long and distinguished practice, and I received news yesterday that after a bad fall, he passed away.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Wow. So it's smooth sailing for you, at least at this line. I mean, put it that way, it's terrible.
I don't know that that's the case. I presume his name will still be on the ballot, and I could still be defeated.
You could lose to a dead person.
Thank you for not making me say it.
You know, it's a dang. Nothing can be worse than being called Darla.
Well, I told you, I said during the program yesterday that yesterday was a day.
But you see, boy, the falls are scary because that's something that I'm scared to death that I have to worry about because I get injured pretty bad.
So I can imagine.
I'm sticking close to the wheelchair these days. Wow.
Yeah, same. I'm waiting for details.
Is it too late for somebody else to come in?
Yes.
To challenge you, or is it you and the dead guy?
It's him and me. And I'm waiting for word on what the arrangements are, if there's going to be a funeral, a memorial service, a celebration of life, and I will certainly be there because I knew him, and he supported me in my first run, and I want to be there. I want to be there to support his family. He actually only filed because he was afraid there wasn't going to be anybody to fill that legislative ballot position, and he filed by mail when
I. So he sounds like a good egg.
Yeah, he was. And this is no pejorative. He was an iconoclast. He had no problem barbecuing sacred cows.
So, this is not the same guy that ran against you
2 years ago.
Said,
no,
I won't bring up that you're a trans woman or something.
No, that's a totally different person.
Okay.
Message me off air and I'll give you a little more background. But nil nisi bonum.
I'm sad to hear that.
I am too.
I think that's totally appropriate that you pay your respects. How old was this individual,
I last spoke to him on January 28th, and he had turned 80 the week previous.
Oh.
We were both Aquariuses.
Oh, wow.
But yeah,
he was going to run at 80. Wow, that's...
He had been...
That's impressive.
He had been a good Democrat all his life, and he was not going to go see that legislative seat go to some Republican without making the Republican put up a fight.
So did he not know you were running?
I had filed on Wednesday the 24th, and he filed by mail, so no, he did not.
Oh, he didn't even know.
No.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
It was sad and shocking.
Yeah, I mean, now that I have a little better understanding of the story here. Wow. Okay.
And so yesterday,
my dog's got up, so I better start preparing to get them taken care of. I'll tell you a quick story. My town is I live in a horrifically blood red area of Connecticut. My town is horrifically blood red. Basically, the Democrats are basically Republicans in this town. I served on the library board for 6 years. I was supposed to become board president. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. And this crotchety old woman who used to be a Republican and then suddenly became a Democrat, wound up losing an election. She was very big on being on the library board. And I was more or less conscripted, but I, you know, felt it was my duty to continue to serve. And it's a long term, it's 6 years. So it's quite a commitment. I was saddled with being the secretary after she left, or she got booted off. She got voted off.
Which is a rotten job.
Some crazy Republican got on the board. And I'm proud of my work as the secretary, though, and I'm easily a shoo-in because I'm a writer. And I'm pretty good at it, so I don't really mind. But the outgoing board president is a friend of mine. Well, he left the board. He decided to retire. He'd been on there for many, many years. We just had an election. She was not reelected to the board, and then basically stole a seat onto the board. I protested. The outgoing board president had no clue that, you know, and I didn't get along with her. Like, she was very insulting. You know, she clearly respected Republicans more. She would insult me, put me down during meetings, things like that, even though we're supposedly in the same party. And so she wound up getting onto the board due to a recommendation, a nomination by the former board president. And one of the only Democratic selectmen on the three-member selectmen, board of selectmen, without even talking to me. Nobody in my party, nobody on the Democratic Town Committee discussed this with me. It was all scurrying behind the scenes. I found out from the library director, who said, "Hey, I don't know if you know this, but and I'm like, "Oh, fuck!" So I was so upset, because what they should be doing is cultivating somebody like me who's new and upcoming, and instead they put in the old retread in violation of library board bylaws, because the only way to nominate somebody to the board that was not voted on, I mean, literally the election that we had local election was barely 11 days old, and the decision had been made by the people of my town. So, and they didn't want her back on the board. And so she stole a seat back onto the board, getting a nomination from the now retired board president. And according to the bylaws, you're supposed to, the only way the nomination can happen is by a sitting board president. So the laws get, you know, the rules, the ordinances, the bylaws, the policies, all that stuff gets ignored. He gets on the board, and immediately we're looking at officer positions. Boom, I want to be board president. And all the Republicans are like, "Great, yeah, sure, here you go." Because the Republicans always out, you know, they're always more numerous because they control everything. And the Democrats have never held any seat. They've never held the Senate seat. We're going on, this community is like 275 years old, 280 to 300 years old. And so the last I heard is 100 years. They've never, ever held a Senate seat, okay? So I quit. I resigned from the Democratic Town Committee in protest. Everybody thought I was a freak and that I overreacted. And that's what the Democratic selectman who came hat in hand to me 2 years later, begging me to run with him, for me to run as first selectman. And I said, "No way." "Well, I'm a progressive." I said, "No, you're not." I said, "And I'm not running with you." And then when people started to find out more of the details, more people resigned in protest of how I was treated in this process. So anyway, I did complete my term. I'm a team player. I had a couple more years left, so I finished out my 6-year term. And I said, you know, I'm not running again, which one of the other Republicans was, you're not running? I'm like, no. And she chose not to run because even though she's a Republican, the one nutcase Republican that got on the board has been trying to interfere in the subject matter of what the library has its patrons, you know, will direct its patrons to and that kind of thing. And I was always there to stop it as a secretary. I would say, look, I don't think, nope, this is, you know, you're overdue. This is the type of Republican that believes, you know, the China virus and all of the crazy shit. Okay, she's a complete Trumpian person, very wealthy as well, surprise, surprise. The board president, the one that stole the seat, would always be quiet. And then I would have to be the one to step up during the meetings and say, we don't want to get into subject matter. No, our job here is to let the library director do what she needs to do. The library director was on the verge of quitting over all of this because we're starting to get politicized. I would stop it, and then because I spoke up, the other Republican who didn't run because I decided to get off the board, she said, I better get out while I can, she would back me up. She would say, well, we shouldn't get into the subject. Like, she was in agreement. You know, let the librarian do her job. So I haven't been on that board, I think, in about 3 or 4 years. Well, shit broke open recently. In that... And it made the state news. And that the book, Gender Queer.
Oh, God, here we go.
Was removed from the youth area or children's area last summer. Not that long after the library director resigned to move on to working in social services. I think she saw the writing on the wall and how librarians are being vilified, you know, in these Republican maggot strongholds. So fascism has come to my town. And there is I did not know we had a trans man in my town, a young fella. And the 6 years that I served on that library board, no one ever came to these. You know, they're public. The meetings are public. No one ever came. This one of the last month was jam-packed. Okay. Apparently they're saying there were 80 complaints or, you know, against this book. And Micah, his name is, the trans man said that this was improper. This book helped him when he was trying to figure things out, and that he will demand due process. Well, the news media came. We're talking state news, NBC, boom. And, well, that board president, who's still there as the board president, the one that stole her way onto the board, who is supposedly a Democrat, a dino, also is the chair of the local Democratic town committee. And I have been complaining to people privately that I'm like, whenever I've attended the selectmen meetings, and let's put it this way, we have an awful, bigoted, misogynistic, racist fuck as our first selectman. He's a bonehead. He is an ogre. He's all of those things. He's just an asshole. And what I was noticing at these selectmen meetings is that they kept looking to this woman who was there taking notes, you know, virtually. She was up on the, you know, because they would pipe us in from the COVID years. You can zoom in to these meetings, to the board of selectmen meetings.
Right.
And they seemed to be running everything by her. And she used to be on the board of selectmen many, many, many years ago. One of the few women that actually got on it, because basically a Republican. And I kept saying to people, it's like, since when did we ever have I call her the unelected shadow fourth selectman.
Oh, Jesus.
And I said, well, what is she doing? Why are they running everything by her? Why are they checking? Well, come to find out, and she got caught. She had to apologize on state TV, everything like that. And apparently she and the first selectman scurried around behind the scenes last summer in violation of library policy, library board of director policy, and who knows what else. And they clandestinely removed the book from the shelf.
That's so dirty.
And there was a big uproar, and Micah, this trans man, said, you know, I will accept due process. She had to apologize. Well, you know, I'm sorry, I'm only human. I'm like, really, fucking bitch, you're only human? She yields. Look, this is somebody who has made her name and her bona fides using Robert's Rules of Order, bylaws, town ordinances, everything is a cudgel to wield against everybody else. She knows best. Only she knows, you know, hence Shadow Force Legends are always running everything. Is that the proper procedure, so-and-so? And I knew it was all bullshit because I'm like, she's the type that scurries around behind the scenes, because I privately had a discussion with her. I said, look, I said, this board member that's trying to interfere, like, it was something about patrons were asking about information for something, was during the COVID years, and she, the library director, would refer people to some information about, I don't know if it was about vaccines or whatever, and that's what got this maggot in an uproar. And I spoke out against it. I said, there's nothing wrong with what the library director did, blah, blah, blah. So see, I'm off the board and already there's mayhem. And the library board president, this woman said, you know, that she was trying to quote unquote resolve a problem, and that she's made a mistake and she's only human, but she's willing to move forward. And I'm thinking, bullshit. And they're all covering for her. Even the Democrats on this fucking board. You know, well, she made a mistake. The hell she made a mistake. She knows that. And then there's, you know, the board did say, we do not like the first selectman micromanaging. I feel that what the first selectman and this library board president did was disqualifying. They should be forced to resign. She should be asked to step down as chair of the Democratic Town Committee because what she did was not democratic. Micah, who is a generous heart, is a generous, he's a young man, he's a young fella, a trans man. He said, I will give the board president the grace, you know, that it was a mistake, but I will demand due process to keep this book on the shelf. This bonehead fucking idiot that we have for a first selectman, this fascist bonehead, is like, well, then we're going to have it behind a circulation desk, and any child that wants to look at it has to get permission from their parents. That was the last I heard. I said, you fucking kidding me? Now, Robin, what if a child needed to look at that book? What if there was a child here in town that's, and this is a freaking one horse, rural, cows in the street type of town. Blood red as they make them. What if the
lost beefaloes?
Question, like Micah. Why? Yeah, buddy, the beefaloes everywhere. What if there was a child last summer that was tormented, didn't really was questioning their identity or, you know, their sexuality, whatever their, you know, and they needed to. This book may have helped them. It was nowhere to be found. They pulled this book off the shelf in violation of library policy, board of director policy, everything that we just revised the bylaws. When before I stepped down, the year leading into my last year, we revised all the board of director bylaws at her insistence. See? So you see where she uses this as a cudgel. Once a Republican, always a Republican.
Absolutely.
So
and
guess what? My town is the only town in the entire fucking state of Connecticut that has the dubious distinction now of having done something like this.
It makes me wonder.
It makes me wonder,
Darlene, how many degrees of separation there are between your first selectman and some member of the Moms for Liberty.
Exactly. Well, he tried to pull this shit because he was scared, because he finally had a decent Democratic candidate running up against him. And he started getting nervous that night because he's an asshole. Nobody likes him. But I'll tell you something, the Republicans, they'll put in an utter asshole before they lose power in this town. They come out and force, they'll put fucking Republican amoeba in the center seat if it means they retain power. And what did he do? He started accusing on Facebook that Democrats were rigging it, that they were rigging the election, local election. He started spewing MAGA conspiracies. And then he ripped the post down, but somebody who is sort of a progressive, she did a screenshot of it and sent it to me. And she gave him hell. After he won, she gave him hell. How dare you put that up? It flew under the radar. Nobody's complained. Nobody said anything. Nobody called this asshole out. So this is fascism. And the fact that this is disqualified, he should be forced to resign. She should be forced to resign. Whatever positions. Because what they've done is censorship. This was attempted censorship. This is the first stage of fascism, right?
Sure. The suppression of basic knowledge. Could I answer the question you asked for just a minute? I know you've got to get to your pups. But you said,
sure, go ahead, sorry.
You said what would happen if there was a child in town who needed that information, was trying to sort themselves out? What might happen to them otherwise if they didn't have access?
Exactly.
Well, you've heard me talk about my sister Terry. You know, she and I went to high school together,
yeah.
Graduated together, all that.
Yeah.
We were friends. Well, when we were about 12 years old and did not know each other yet, we were going to the Florence Lauderdale Public Library. And there was a book on human sexuality there. And there weren't any, you know, nobody was gatekeeping the books. I mean, good heavens. The good Baptist kids I grew up with, we would take great delight, being good Baptists, in thumbing through the Bible and finding the dirty parts. And they were a lot more accessible than a single lone book on human sexuality.
Right.
But Terry would go to the library, and she would read. And at other times, I would go to the library, get the same book, and I would read. And the language was completely different then. And, of course, we understand now that gender has nothing to do with sexuality and vice versa. But it was through that one lone dust-covered book that we both figured out that we were, to use the language of the time, transsexuals. And it didn't provide any solace. I think Terry would agree with me on this. But at least it provided some clarity. And for all I know, you know, there were four trans kids. And there were three in my graduating class and one in a graduating class before us. And for all I know, we were all going there and reading that book. And please remember, Darlene, this was Alabama, and nobody was having a conniption. This is Alabama in 1975. And No one was made worse for it. And of course, in the case of Terry and me, we figured out who we were and promptly went about the business of trying to suppress the fuck out of it.
until we could suppress no more. I mean, it's heartbreaking. I go to different discussion platforms and things, and I see young people who are trying to sort out their gender. And it's heartbreaking, Darlene, to see them struggling and asking themselves, am I this? Am I that? I don't want to be this. And but at least, you know, there's the internet now. So so with these book bans and banning things like genderqueer, they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle, as it were, or put Humpty Dumpty back together again. But the thing is, Terry and I are living proof, and I would never dare speak for her, but I suggest I would surmise so too is our sister Cynthia. Once you know, but then once you know, you want to know more. You want it because being alive on planet Earth is a journey. It's supposed to be, at least under the best of circumstances, of self-discovery.
Yeah.
You know, Plato yeah. writing in the voice of Socrates saying the unexamined life is not worth living. Well, if that's true, the lives of people who are trans are some of the most valuable lives on Earth because we have examined the living bejesus out of ourselves, trying to figure out who and what and why. And in my case, I won't speak for anyone else, the time that I spent suppressing and repressing and refusing was incredibly damaging, incredibly painful. And, you know... And that's what they
Michael
want.
Was saying. What if a child hurt themselves? What if a child, that they saw that book, you know, Micah said that book helped him figure out, you know, that he was male, that he was, and there are cartoon pictures, there's like, you know, photos, not real photos, but it's like drawings, you know, like almost a cartoon photo, couple of young men kissing, that kind of thing. And that just, you know, rubs these maggot Republicans around here the wrong way. And that boneheaded first electman that we have wants to make kids have to get permission from their parents. This is somebody who's running our town who does not think, the guy doesn't think very deep. He's a dumb fuck. What if the kid can't go to the parents? What if the child is so... How is a child going to go to... Can I read genderqueer? What, you know, you don't know the familial situation at home.
No, here's the Bible. Read that.
And I'm sure there's multiple Bibles up on the shelves in that library. You want to talk about, you know... stuff that people shouldn't be reading, then, you know, pull that off the shelf. So it's again, I'm keeping quiet. I mean, I talk to, you know, close friends. Actually, it was my, he used to live here, member of the LGBTQ, one of my closest friends told me about it and went to the meeting and kept me apprised. I am more or less kind of quiet about it because it's well known what happened all those years ago, so I'll be accused of having an axe to grind. But then again, hell yeah, maybe I do have an axe to grind. She should not be board president of that library. What she did was disqualifying. She's, you know, if you're going to wield, you know, procedure, policy, Robert's rules, if you're going to wield that as a cudgel against everyone else in order to puff yourself up and make it seem like you're so damned important that you can scurry around behind the scenes as a unelected shadow force selectman. say, yeah, I'm going to have a fucking problem with you. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And our...
he should not be... No, he should not be the first selected. He should be forced to resign. And, you know, that's we have so many, the problems are so embedded. You know, you should stick in the fight. Look, that Democratic selectman who came to me hat in hand, apologizing for what happened and asking me to run for first selectman with him, no fucking way. You know what he does? He siphons off the votes from the first selectman candidate that he partners up with. He's done that from day one.
Trying to play you for a chump.
Day one.
And by
exactly.
the way,
and it's like you're the problem. He's the problem.
You mentioned the trans guy there where you live named Micah. Well, you know, we have our own Micah, and she's a woman, and she just said, "I certainly would." In my case, it was going through one of the encyclopedia CDs that came with my computer. And yes, the realization was terrifying. And then adds, note, if the kid's parents don't already know, there's a reason for that. And the reason is the child, and if you take a moment to just ponder this, Darlene, a child whose first thought in regard to their parents is, I am scared of them, is already an abused child.
Yep. Oh, I agree 100%. Well, Micah is, the Micah here, the trans man, he is a young person who is very, he's a sweetheart. He doesn't realize, you know, although he's willing to forgive this board president, he does not, the poor fellow does not know who he's dealing with. I know what she's all about. But he's made it clear that this is not over. And that he said due process. He goes, I expect due process. I'm going to demand that there is due process. And I think that was code for, I'm going to file a fucking lawsuit if I have to. Because he said, that book helped me, and I want to be sure that book is on the shelves for any other child that may need it. So good on him. And I hope he fucking sues this town for everything it's worth, because I am embarrassed. I am embarrassed that this town now holds the distinction of basically taking a step towards fascism and pulling a book off the shelves of censorship. If you don't rail against that hard, she should be told she needs to resign. That first electman needs to resign. They need to resign in disgrace. So the only real thing I can do at this point is I have one of the best fucking lawns here in this town. I've got major signage.
Girl. I'd mail you one of mine just for the hell of it.
You should. And it probably won't be this year, the presidential election, but the following year, I'm going to have some choice questions for the Democrats in my town that want to put their signs on my lawn. I'm going to ask them, where do you stand on what happened with the book banning attempt with Judge Aquir? Where do you stand on it? Do you feel that this individual who is your board chair of your town committee, why is she still your board? Why is she still your chair of your town committee? Do you feel that what she did was disqualifying? And there are right answers to those questions. And if they don't give me the right answers, their sign ain't fucking going on my lawn.
Good.
Even though they're Democrats. Because the problem is that they're ineffectual. The Democrats in town are ineffective. They're ineffectual. And I'm one of the few progressives in town. My friend down the street is the same way, but she did a lot of work with the locals around here. So she tries to tread carefully. Like, she's very neutral and just get out and vote. But she is as insanely liberal as I am. we had a really good, this guy who was like, I'm left to left. And sadly, he and his wife moved away because I think they were sick of the town. You know, it's a losing battle here. But this went too far. And to me, heads are not rolling sufficiently. The only thing is that, she got caught, got called out in a big way on the state news, and the repercussions have not been severe enough. And a former Democratic, statewide Democratic, chair who ran for office or whatever is basically catering to her and saying it's okay. So we got a problem. We got a problem. It's a big problem that everybody kisses this woman's ass. So all of the rules apply to everybody else except her. And I knew that. I knew it. I knew it. So that's a disappointing thing with my town. But at least it'll help me get the word out when they want to put their signs on my lawn. I can push back and say, where do you stand on this? What have you done about it? What have you done to complain, or, you know, why is she still leading your town committee? Do you think this is right? Do you feel that this should be tolerated in any manner, way, shape, or form?
You deserve an answer.
And they don't deserve to put their fucking sign on my lawn and take up my valuable real estate for free if they don't have the right answer. If they're not looking at this in a way that is like, you know, we're in a 5-alarm fire. Because I feel that's a 5-alarm fire right there. Once you start with something, I mean, you know. Now, fortunately, I have to look at the whole article because it's written up in the local paper here, which is biased because of all the results. It's more my town people. But it was snarky against what happened here. But the headline was something along the lines that the other public libraries and the library system spoke out, I think, against what happened here. So there's pushback from higher authorities within the library system in the state. So that's somewhat a relief, but I'm basing that on the headline. I got to look a little bit deeper into the article, which I hope to do because it's end of month, so I'm running ragged. It's my busiest time. And I have only so many brain cells. But to handle everything, take care of two geriatric, one, you know, dogs, one that's on his way out, sadly. And it's just, I wanted to tell you about that. And then also my concerns about the official case. And, yeah. So, nice conversation. I hope you're enjoying the warm weather. We're having typical Connecticut weather, rainy, although it's supposed to warm up to the 50s this weekend. We've had some pretty cold weather. I'm seeing signs of spring. Kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, it kind of blew my mind because it seems like it's a little early this year, but driving back from Charleston, and Charleston's at a lower altitude than where I am, the red buds down there are absolutely in riot. And I live for the blooming of the red buds here, Darlene, because the mountains aren't really greening up yet, and so for just a brief period of time here, the mountains turn pink, and there are bright flashes of pink throughout all the hills.
Isn't that pretty?
Oh, that's beautiful. And because it's kind of, the red buds actually put out their blossoms before they leaf, and so when a gentle wind will blow by, The pink petals will be carried on the breeze, and the forest floor will be covered in pink. And it's just...
That's pretty. Well, I wonder, is there a nice scent?
Yeah, there is. And in point of fact, last year at Pride, there was a couple there who, you know, you get people showing up who... you know, make homemade goods and canned things and candles and, you know, all kind, you know, the kind of stuff you see at any given festival. And last year, in complete just disdain for trying to watch my carbs, I bought two things that just gladdened my heart, Darlene. One was a bottle of honeysuckle syrup. They meticulously and laboriously gathered honeysuckle blossoms and made syrup. Wonderful. And, oh, yeah, on a fresh, hot, fluffy biscuit with butter, and just to drizzle a little bit of that honeysuckle syrup over it, or over pancakes,
God,
or a waffle.
Oh, my God.
When I go to Pride in Beckley this year, I'm going to see if they're there, and I'll buy a couple extra bottles if I can afford it. But the other thing they had was red bud jelly. Where they had gathered the blossoms from the red buds, and it was fragrant and floral and pink and absolutely heavenly. And the nice thing is they are indigenous to the region. They're not something that wandered over here
that
from Europe.
Wonderful. That sounds wonderful. I mean, we're still, it's rainy, cold. It's you know, Connecticut weather, New England weather, right? You know what Samuel Clemens said, Mark Twain. You know, oh, New England weather, just wait a minute. It'll
change.
You know, something like that.
Elma,
my elm tree is budding.
Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff blooming around here, and I know that for a fact because of the mornings I wake up now feeling like somebody's turned me upside down in the night and filled my head with concrete.
Same here. God, it's like, I'm like, where's the box of Kleenex? I keep it right on the bed. We have there is a home, And we're known for, I guess, our flower, the mountain laurel. There is a house in the city below where I live here, and I haven't been able to get up there in years, not only because I can't drive yet, but also because the last time I attempted to go up this steep hill and come back down, I burned my brakes. They were smoking, and this hill is steep. To go up this hill on the right, there's this beautiful big-ass ranch on a hill, and there's a driveway that winds up to it. It's a small, short ridge, but the entire hillside in front of this home, they planted all mountain laurels. It is hundreds of mountain laurel trees. The entire hillside below this house is pink. In the spring, when the mountain laurels bloom.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. And those are clusters, too. They're like snowballs.
Yeah. It is un-fucking believable. The entire hillside is all mountain laurels pink when they bloom. Those cups, the mountain laurel cups. Sticky little cups. And, you know, and then, of course, it's a very brief period of time, but it draws, it's quite an attraction. For people that drive up there that, you know, don't burn out the brakes on the way back down. But, so I'm happy for this time of year. I don't know if my little owl, I think it's going to be a sad summer because I don't think Alfie's going to make it to the summer. But he's still going. He had another progression with his heart. It wasn't as bad, but this stuff has takes a lot out of him when the severe valve disease progresses. His lungs, again, fill up with fluid, and he also had bronchitis. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? He may also have a mass or a growth on the lung now, but he seems okay now. I'm just really struggling to fine-tune things to get him to try to eat consistently. That's where things are kind of a struggle, but, you know, he's still going, but he's an old boy and very, very weak, so... I don't know how much preparation I can do to prepare myself for the inevitable, but, it's a lot of care.
I don't know that you can.
Yeah, I don't know if you can. you know. But he's with it. He's with it. He got me up at freaking 3:30 in the morning to go outside to the bathroom. I'm like, no, because he didn't pee. But then he drank tons of water, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to have to do a late night run, 3 a.m., early morning run at 3 a.m., which was the case. But, you know, he's aware. He knows enough. I got to go to the bathroom. So that's good. He's got his wits about him.
Bless
at any rate,
heart.
I better get going, and I'm going to listen in. And
my best to him. Thank you, Darlene.
Thank you.
You know, every time you call in, you bring your A game, and this has been a wonderful conversation.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, I encourage people to listen to Judge Ludig's interview, to listen to that interview. It's very interesting, his take on it. And I think he's absolutely gobsmacked with what this Supreme Court is doing. And, you know, I feel like every time they get into session, we're all on pins and needles. And it's like, oh, God, what scary shit are they going to come up with now? And I do wish somebody, just one last parting thought. You know, I like Jamie Raskin. I really do. You know, Jamie Raskin is fucking brilliant. And he's been doing with Brian Tyler Cohen. He's been doing many constitutional law classes. He talks about the Constitution because he's obviously a constitutional scholar. And so these things go for about an hour or so. So it's very interesting to listen to them. And, you know, Jamie Raskin looks like he was there. He looks like if you were to slap a powdered wig on the dude, I think he could fit right into those famous photos of our famous. Right?
Yeah, you know, back when he was dealing with prostate cancer and was wearing that cool bandana that Steve Van Zandt gave him, somebody should have given him a powdered wig.
He would have worn it. He would have donned it, man.
Hell, give him the knee breeches and the lace blouse too. I mean, he would have looked powerful.
He looks like he would fit in perfect. Like if you were to plunk him into those famous scenes, you know, where they're there and Washington is standing for, you know, and they're coming up there arguing out and hammering out the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
He'd fit right into that. Like, he looks like he's from that era.
You're absolutely right.
So I don't think anyone has asked him, and I really wish somebody would. And if he has been asked about this, please direct me to where I can watch his response, because I really, really want to know what the fuck went down with the January 6th committee and insurrectionist Thomas. You know, and I know you've said it's because of what's her face.
Liz.
When Liz Cheney, she's my friend kind of thing. But that just doesn't cut it for me.
I don't want to hear from him.
I want to know. Right, and I want to know, he knows better. You know, he knows she's a problem, especially with her husband. You know, because I think he has spoken out about the problems, the blatant conflicts with him sitting on the Supreme Court and making decisions. You know, in everything from Anderson to Fisher that's upcoming, to the immunity case that's coming up, and all of that. And, you know, I want him to level with us as to what the fuck happened there. So if he's answered any questions on that, please let me know where I can watch it. If not, somebody, please. You know, ask him the question.
Well, you know, send a note to BTC.
That's a good idea.
I have one once in a while. They don't all die of loneliness. In this empty space.
Yeah, I don't know if they kind of go down the YouTube memory hole, but I wish somebody would ask him, because something happened in that with that Jan 6 committee you know, now we still don't know who.
Well, I think for the for the sake of cohesion and speaking with one voice, because you remember there was that one counsel for that for the J6 committee who quit and discussed and talked on the way out the door. And if I recall correctly, he alluded to the fact that the Democrats on the committee bent themselves into pretzels to keep Kinzinger and Liz Cheney happy. Because back then, they still thought that there was some chance of saving the Republican Party. So that's my best guess.
Well, clearly he formed a friendship with Liz Cheney. You could see that they had a very good rapport, and he even tried to advocate for her to get back into Congress, for her to be Speaker of the House. You remember that?
Yep.
Didn't you ask him? When it was clear, obviously, that Hakeem Jeffries didn't have a chance at it, he brought up Liz Cheney. And I think it was his way of giving a nod to her, you know, for all that she did with the January 6th committee.
I think so.
And Jamie Raskin. Who will be the first to say, I don't agree, you know, we don't agree on many of the policies and things like that. But I think obviously he feels, must feel on some level, she is somebody that they could work with, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously better than that horrid, horrid thing that replaced her, that horrid woman.
Here's an interesting piece of trivia. Irish Dave just said, today's fun fact, Jamie Raskin comes by that naturally since his father, Marcus Raskin, led the American Revolutionary Bicentennial.
That is correct, yes. I think I remember something about that.
And I remember
talked about it.
I remember being a child, 13, and my parents driving to Huntsville to take me to make sure, and they wanted to see it too, the Freedom Train. There was an Amtrak train that was set up as a rolling museum of the Revolution and the Declaration of Independence. And we went and toured it, and it was wonderful. The things you remember.
Was that the same train that Lincoln's body was?
No, I think it was just a repurposed.
Carted around on?
No, this was just a repurposed okay. Amtrak train.
That's one fucking creepy story. Holy shit! Whatever preservatives they used, like he was not the cave. That's
no.
A creepy ass story.
Oh, it absolutely! Like, and you know where I think is it the Smithsonian, the chair he was sitting in when John Wilkes Booth shot him, still has his blood on it.
Yeah, that shit is creepy.
And by the way, unpaid product placement, if you've got Apple TV Plus, the movie Manhunt, holy smokes! It's about the search for John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, that sounds interesting. That sounds fascinating.
Worth your time.
Huh.
Well, Darlene, have a wonderful evening. Enjoy the coming of spring to the Nutmeg State.
Yes, so I can't. I mean, I like Easter, but I'm not going to be doing much. I wish our Easters were a little bit warmer, because I'd be just sitting out on the back deck. I will say, Connecticut had a planting zone change. My friend was telling me about it. We went up a level. I think we went, I don't know, from 5 to 4 because of the climate is getting warmer. So, like, plants that we couldn't plant here, we can now plant here. I don't know if that's good or bad. I think that's not great. So usually it's raining here on Easter, what we're supposed to have, you know, 50 degree weather. So I don't know. I have my propane heater out on the deck here. Maybe I'll get some time outside if it's sunny enough. But yeah, I've just got two more crazy days with Grants, and then I'm hoping to take the weekend, like take the whole weekend off, and just decompress. That's my hope. And just putter around, because I'm a home putterer, and just veg out, relax. There's and by the way, there's another movie. Oh my God, I think I'm channeling Scott.
Good. Somebody needs to.
I think it's on Vimeo. Vimeo. Mm-hmm. You can watch it on YouTube. It's called Sasquatch, and it's not what you think. It's really, really interesting. It's a documentary. It's called Sasquatch. And it's very, very interesting. It's an investigative thing that takes you in all these different directions. And the conclusion is, it's very interesting. And it has to do with California. And, if you have a chance to watch it, give it a shot.
Okay. Sounds good.
It's not what you think.
Oh, no.
Not what you think, but it's very interesting. And it kind of talks also about recent major changes in our laws that may not be doing what we thought they were doing. And that's near the end when that other little bomb is dropped. But, so that's my Scott from,
San Diego.
Suggestion to watch. Manhunt for me, Sasquatch for you.
All right. Darlene.
Yeah. All right.
Take care, dear. All right. See ya.
All right. You too. Bye-bye, Roxanne. Bye-bye.
Darlene amazes me. Just absolutely amazes me. I want to take a moment here. Because today is a very special day. Today is my youngest daughter's birthday. It blows my mind to say that she's 27. And she is amazing. She's an absolutely brilliant wife and mom. Her little boy is just precious. And back in 2015, when she turned 18, she would graduate high school in a couple of months. And I was overcome by memory. And that day, 9 years ago, I sat and thought about the moment Doodle arrived. And I wrote this down. To Doodle. A comet hung in the sky when you were born. Late March and clear of evening. I stood outside the hospital by the rising Elk River, looking west by north at something no human being had seen for 4,000 years. When last it came, your Celtic ancestors were unknown to Mediterranean invaders, your Norse root stock still building fires against wolves crossing the ice, those who gave you your few drops of real American blood still journeying through Eden. A smoking star, the ancients called it. And had I had the words in some ancient tongue, I might have named you that, smoking star, ablaze in beauty and wit, in your wake a trail the rest of us may trace by eye, but never overtake. Instead, we named you for the grandmothers, three of them, strong women, smart women, women of fierce determination, women who struggled, women who prevailed, women who made their own magic, held all together when others faltered. But me? All I could do when I first held you, looked at you, was cry tears of unrestrained joy at the baby beauty of you. I was struck dumb like some biblical fool, and in that moment only my awestruck tears could speak. Smoking star, you make joyful tracers of sparkler light. You were, you are, my doodle. I've thought about her all day long. It's really hard. It's truly difficult. When your children leave home, and especially when they are far, far away. I haven't seen Doodle in 5 years. Once again, I'm making a promise to myself that this is my summer. This is the summer that I go and see my baby. But travel is hard. Harder now than it need be. I should mention, Darlene mentioned Easter. Now, this is prayer meeting Wednesday, so the story fits. Because it's really, really stupid. Unutterably breathtaking stupid. Only three times since 1929 has Easter fallen on the last day of March. Look that out. I looked that up. And this is the third time. Well, March the 31st is also, and this entire week is the week of transgender visibility. But Sunday in particular is the transgender day of visibility. And so those of us who are out, who are able to live our lives, we go to gatherings, we post photos, and it's not for ourselves, it's not for our own egos. It's for those we know who are still unable to be authentically themselves. This is my fourth. Five years ago, I was one of the people the people who did Transgender Day of Visibility were being visible for. And now I can do a little bit. And, like I said, this is a really dumb story because it comes from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. The Fairfax County Board of Supervisors voted 9-0 in favor of a proclamation last week that would make this Sunday, the 31st of March, in Fairfax County, Transgender Day of Visibility. This immediately caused a grunting, howling, barking, shrieking, screaming, screeching outcry from the followers of the Prince of Peace, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life. Speaking to the resolution, Fairfax Supervisor Jimmy Bierman said during the vote, "I'm just very happy that we're recognizing a community that has too often been pushed into the shadows and celebrating yet another community within our diverse tapestry here in Fairfax County. We want to make sure that everybody who's a part of our community feels welcomed, feels loved, and feels empowered." Another board member, Democrat James Walkinshaw, said, "I look forward to the day when we have a full dais for this proclamation, and that day will come because the bigots stayed home." Another Democrat, County Board Chairman Jeff McKay, said, "We have a moral responsibility to stand up for all people, not just the people we like or the people we agree with." Enter Stephanie Lundquist Aurora, who's a mom
and the chapter leader of the Independent Women's Network of Fairfax County. They call themselves a private online forum empowering conservative women to inspire, influence, and impact their communities. Well, Stephanie Lundquist of Rora said, this is reprehensible. They're not just trying to make transgender people feel seen. By voting to make Easter this year Transgender Visibility Day, they're intentionally trying to offend Christians on the holiest of days by forcing gender ideology down their throats. This is reprehensible and unbecoming of our elected representatives.
Oh, Jesus, lady, take a fucking Valium. With a big swallow of scotch. You claim to follow Jeebus, lady. What do you say? You do what Jesus would have done and go and hang out with some transgender people. Because Jesus hung out with the people that good, polite society of their day wouldn't be caught dead being seen around. Nobody deliberately made March 31st to, you know, piss off the good Christians. Fucking assholes.
So, I don't know what I'm going to wear on Sunday, but I'm going to try to make sure that it's pretty. And I'll post a picture. And I will think the warmest and kindest of thoughts for my sisters, my brothers, and my nibblings out there who can't yet be seen. And maybe I'll send a bottle of scotch and a handful of Valiums to Ms. Lundquist Aurora. And a swirly straw. And a Bible. Nightmare.
But it is prayer meeting Wednesday, so we had to have some good Christian hypocrisy now, didn't we?
By the way, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa answered Ralph's $25 challenge for the for melanoma being the least popular first lady of the entire history of the American Republic. Here's to Joe Liar Man kicking the bucket. Fuck that cocksucker. He knows why. Don't hide your light under a bushel, Brother Deacon. So there's $5 to go on Ralph's challenge. Be great if somebody would answer that. That'll put us down to $650 to go to be fully funded for the month of March. If we got down to 600, that would mean we would be right on schedule. $300 for Thorn in the Side Thursday, $300 for Friday on the Front Porch, and shazam, Sergeant Carter, we're fully funded. And, you know, there's 18 minutes or so in which maybe we can get that done. I had an anonymous note while Darlene and I were chatting about that brave young man in her community who dared to stand up for books that help trans kids. An anonymous individual said, I remember just beginning to come to the realization I'm gay. I can't tell you how many times I had the, but this wasn't supposed to happen to me conversation, and this just doesn't fit into my plans. Yeah. I had conversations with myself similar to that. And I was talking to someone the other day who said that she had made the decision that in order to keep everything that was good about her life, she would
resist transition, repress her true nature, and refuse, and said, are there any strategies to make this any easier, to make this godforsaken dysphoria go away? And I said, here's the funny thing. If you want the dysphoria to go away, the only way to do that is to transition. And if the people you love love you back, they won't stop simply because you do. Otherwise, to be quite honest with you, it gets worse and it gets louder until it becomes deafening and unbearable. So, happy Transgender Week of Visibility to everyone in our community who is trans and who is either out and living authentically and knowing happiness or still in hiding and yearning for the day they can. As to the latter, we see you, you're valid, and you're loved. Let's go over to the Skype line. I think we've got Tracy.
Hey, gorgeous.
Hey.
How you be?
I'm okay. I really want somebody, well, that woman in Fairfax County, dear God.
Oh, my God. Well, did you see what I sent you about the Sacramento becoming a sanctuary city?
Yeah, I did. And I had seen that earlier today, and I think that's wonderful. And it's surprising to me, frankly, that...
It is to me as...
Imagine Sacramento, of all places, becoming the first city in California. Not L.A., not San Diego, not San Francisco. To become a sanctuary city for trans folks. There's only one problem. There's only one problem, though, Tracy.
What, you can't afford to live here?
Not necessarily me, but the question of, you know, who can? Anybody who is already having to uproot their entire lives to protect their child or themselves and flee everything that they have known and loved in, say, some godforsaken place like Alabama or do not travel Florida. They're not just going to swan into San Francisco and be met with a Laurel and Hardy handshake and hail thou well met, here's your new apartment, would you care to buy some real estate? How about a great job?
Yeah, no, as of the 1st of this month of April, you have to, fast food restaurants have to pay their workers $20 an hour. And they're already, you know, bitching about that, saying, you know, we're going to have to lay people off and raise prices and woo-da-woo-da-woo-da-woo. And we've had this discussion before, sis. If your business plan does not include paying your employees a living wage, then what did we say, sis?
You don't need to be in business.
Okay. Bottom line. And by the way, because, you know, this is the part of a larger conversation of what is called low income. Because I think I told you a few months, sometime last year, a report came out that if you're living in California, not California, but L.A. County, if you don't make more than $70,000 a year, then you're considered low income. Can somebody call the government and change the what they consider poverty wage, you know, poverty? Because I had a passenger this morning during Access, and I've picked this lady up a few times. an older black woman. She's 75 years old. She'll be 76 this year. And she, you know, because she was comfortable enough. We were talking about this. So she has Section 8, right? And even with what she pays in Section 8, her section, you know, she still doesn't have any money, right? And then on top, and she lives in a very nice building, by the way, in the Woodland Hills. And they're constantly harassing her because they want her out because, you know, it's rent controlled and all that. Plus she's on Section 8. She was in tears, Robin. She's like, I'm 75 years old and I never thought I would be in a situation like I am. You know, she was talking about how, what her life is like, how she, you know, she stays in her apartment because she doesn't want to go out. When she tried to, she was volunteering at like a food pantry, right? And they were saying what a good worker she was, but they had to dismiss her. You know why? Because at one point she got services for them to getting food. And so they don't want it to be a conflict of interest. They don't want people to think that they're having her work there, you know, the payout or in order to get food, even though she's only used their services once. She gets, during COVID, they, you know, how they upped the food stamps amounts that people were getting. So she was getting over $350 a month in food stamps. But then they reduced it back to what the normal amount of food stamps you were getting. Are you ready for how much she's getting now?
Do tell.
$23 a month, sis.
God, don't spend it all on one hamburger.
Right. And she was, that's just one person, Robin. That's just one, and this is a senior citizen. And she has, she's like, I have skills. I'm a paralegal, but nobody wants to hire me because of how old I am.
Age discrimination is a real thing.
I mean, look what happened to my wife. So it's like, well. And I understand her pain because it's like, it's hard enough to be, you know, working class or fucking poor in this country. But to be a black woman of a certain age and having to deal, you know, it's hard enough trying just to function in this world and in this country. But then you add race, age discrimination, racial discrimination, and all these other things. And I don't think anybody wants to do is just to you know, live their lives to be left the fuck alone. But this is not the world that we live in right now. And I think I sent you a couple of things, you know, about, the, you know, so the new thing is instead of saying the N-word or saying urban youth or what urban or whatever, it is now DEI. That is the new N-word.
Yes, it most assuredly is.
It is the new N-word, and so now we have, you know, the people, you know, Leon Scum back in, you know, back a couple of months ago when Boeing was having issues, blaming black pilots for Boeing mishaps and missteps in their, and not making sure, you know, they basically was saying that the, let me make sure I have this right. That because of DEI measures, Boeing was overlooking safety issues or something to that effect. And the same holds true with the young brother who is the mayor of Baltimore, calling him a DEI mayor. Now, okay, you could try to pull that bullshit with people who are, you know, been hired on the job, but this man was elected.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's, you know, what you just said is DEI and then two G's, a vowel, and.
Mm-hmm. And what pisses me off, Robin, about all this is that they think we're stupid. They think that black people don't know what they're saying. I think that's the most egregious part of the whole situation. Is that they feel that we're idiots and that we don't know what they're saying. Come on, for real, though?
It's like they think we can't hear them screaming.
Like braying.
Grunting and braying and barking and hooting and growling. You know, in space, no one can hear you do that.
You know, can Elon, you know, speaking of Leon Scum, since he hates, you know, DEI and shit, can he build a rocket, a phallic symbol rocket, to go to Mars and take the rest of the motherfuckers with them? And I was just thinking, you know, when you were naming off the people who died as a result of that of the bridge collapsing, and of course they weren't from here, and I'm just waiting for the next rate wave. So they blame, now they're going to say it was the illegals, and you know, in quotation marks, caused it was because of them working on the bridge. Or somehow Marco Rubio will use this as a reason to close the border, Bruga. Well, I have you to know that when I did the podcast, I did a Bruga for you.
Well, thank you.
You know, so.
It's Bruga, Warble, Whoosh.
See, I never remembered that, the last two parts. I think Bruga does it. I think it says a lot. So Warble Whoosh. I'm going to remember to add that as well. But you know it's coming, sis. You know it's coming.
Sure it is. As sure as the eclipse is coming and as sure as the sun rises in the east.
Next thing you know, you'll be singing, you know, as the sun's tomorrow. Yeah, and the roses bloom on, you know, I'm thinking of my man Stevie Wonder, and I love that song. As around the sun, the earth knows she's revolving. Yeah, as the rosebuds know how to bloom in early May. And like you said, these things are going to happen. These things, they're gonna move from the DE. My thing is, are they gonna conflate the DEI bear with the immigration crisis, or are they gonna use the two separate things, or is it in a dualist situation? You know, I'm asking for a friend. Or is it a compounding situation? It's these two things compounding, the DEI mayor and the immigrant and the illegals, you know, rushing the border. And this is why the bridge collapsed. Nothing to say about the fact that, you know, we haven't had decent infrastructure until, you know, our current president's been fighting for the infrastructure bill and all these other things to fix shit like this. Because as horrible as what happened, it would have been so much worse had it been later on in the day, and if the people on the boat or the ship or whatever it is did not have the presence of mind to call a mayday to alert the powers that be and the first responders. And the only thing I was thinking, I was talking to my mom about this, about God help us, had this happened when Dope 45.
Yeah. And God help us, had this happened in a maggot state.
Right. You see what happens out here in LA, especially when there might be a problem with the weather or anything like that. Our first response, you know, our mayor is a badass. Okay, and yes, there's some things I'm missed with her about, like increasing police budget and stuff like that. You know, that's a whole.
Well, she wants to get reelected.
Right, I know. And see, remember, political grown-ups, sis.
Yes, indeedy.
I'm not.
Well, okay. So here's another thought. You know, the mayor's a DEI election. The mayor's right. only the mayor because there's so many of there's so many blah people in Baltimore. But here's the fun thing. Where are these assholes going to be when they trot out the heroes of the hour who had the presence of mind to act within seconds, and they're not all white?
I'm waiting for that. Okay, popcorn and red wine. See, I can do that right now because I'm at home. I am actually in my house, sis. I am not calling you from my car.
I know, because the fabulous Bluetooth Bose is not interfering with our conversation.
Fuck you, bitch.
You've been saying that a lot lately.
But you know, it's all.
I know. You dropped some coin on that fabulous Bluetooth Bose.
Ooh, girl. Back before my wife was forced into early retirement. That part. I'm sitting here, you know, looking. I forgot that I have to. I haven't done my taxes yet, and I'm sitting here looking at my 1099 of the money that I made last year, and I'm like, really?
Oh, I found out something fun. I'm being sarcastic. So I was all excited to have insurance now, right?
Yeah.
And my policy says that they cover transgender, gender-affirming care. Right?
Right.
I have, since May of 2021, been using an injectable form of hormone replacement therapy because it works for me where others didn't.
Yes.
Well, my insurance company doesn't cover that because it's not a preferred medication. So I had to, I moved all of my prescriptions away from Walmart because they're transphobic. And I moved it to a little pharmacy associated with the hospital because they were there at the beginning of my transition and they've always been kind to me. And they went looking for my injectables. And the one ester injectable that I'm using now is $463 for a 90-day supply.
Well, I guess the bright
side is... The other ester that I could switch to is $277 for a 90-day supply.
Well, at least it's not a. It's too. I was gonna say, because when you said the prices, I thought you were about to say a month. So I guess you could say.
Well, as it is, I'm shelling out of pocket $100 for a 6-week supply, through a compounding pharmacy. But I shouldn't have to be paying all of it because I have an insurance policy that covers transgender care.
So how is it that if it covers transgender care? But see, this is one of those critical things.
Well, see, I'm trans, and they care.
And they care.
And they care and so much they don't want to spend any money on keeping me alive. Isn't that so caring?
They put the caring in Karen.
Ooh, girl. Oh, I just got a note. Scary Jerry is on the stress line and would like to say hello. I got to get out of here pretty quick, but hey, Scary
okay.
Jerry. Well, Matt, Wave. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to dead name you. Wave. Hey.
No, Scary Jerry was fine.
No, Scary, it's not.
Scary
no, it's
Jerry
not.
Was fine. Now hold on. Let me explain why. And it's a part. Hi, Tracy. How are you?
Hey, baby. What's happening?
Tracy, can you hear me?
Yeah,
oh, my God, honey. I got so much stuff. I have so much stuff. Okay.
It may have to wait till tomorrow.
Our girl has to go.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you the punchline and some liner notes. I'll try to call in earlier tomorrow. And I'll keep my musings down in 3 minutes. The punchline is, holy shit, I'm not gay. I don't like dick at all. I'm just a DJ. That's it. That's the punchline. And the point I wanted to talk to Tracy was about her and don't being a North American Negro as opposed to a Caribbean Negro.
A North American Negro
compared to a Caribbean Negro from one of the islands.
Because if I had been a Caribbean Negro, my skin wouldn't look like a leper because of the sunburn. So yeah, a North American Negro needs to do better with the sunscreen. That part.
I
was forced yesterday to go see, wait for it, Dancing with the Stars Live.
Oh no.
Now, I know the shit is popular, but girl, if you could have heard the rapturous applause, you would think the way these people were yelling and screaming and clapping, you would have thought that we were at the final game, Kobe's final game playing for the Lakers at Staples Center. I mean, it was thunderous. I have never, because I've gone to sporting events, I've gone to events at the Pantages, several. That were award-winning shows and people were really into it, girl, and guy. But this shit, the ground was shaking. I have to say, I enjoyed it more than I wanted to enjoy it because those dancers are amazing. But bless it, my wife said we don't have to stay for the whole show. We left during intermission. But you know how you hate to admit shit, but those people were phenomenal. And they were a little bit more risque than they are on the show. And plus, we didn't have to listen to the inane banter between the hosts. So, you know, but I don't ever have to. Jan's like, well, I'm good. I saw it in person, so I don't ever have to see, ever have to see it again.
Ah, how long was the show?
It's 2 hours, but we only watched
it. How long? 2 hours? Wow. And this was in Puerto Vallarta? I just like saying that. Or was this back in California?
This was last night at home. No, Puerto Vallarta. That's where I got to see the show with the blackface and the High School Musical players. And it was the... So,
all right,
that's a whole nother...
Let me interject. I want to actually respond to things you said over the years.
I know Robin has to go, and there's some kebabs and some hummus and some cucumber and tomato salad waiting for me. So I have to go ahead and eat that.
I've been dying to talk to you about the subject. Give me 30 seconds. Can you do that?
No, you got to ask Robin.
Yeah? Robin, can I do that? Can we finish this tomorrow?
Go for it.
In this country, people of color who are non-Hispanic, we're bred to never unify, to fight constantly amongst each other. One of the biggest fights I had last week was, why you sound so white? Are you a police? Are you supposed to be? Why you talk like that? And that was the thing. That was a really interesting thing. I went from a nobody to somebody, everybody wants to know what's up and what I think and what I'm doing. It's kind of creepy. And I'll leave it at that. And I DJed 2 days ago on Simonton Beach in Key West. And I had the time of my life. It was transcendental. And I'll call tomorrow. Love you, Robin. Love you, Tracy.
Love you, Abe.
So much.
No.
Tracy, go enjoy your kebabs.
I will, and I'll think of you as I'm savoring each bite.
That's okay. I was really, really happy yesterday when I was in Charleston and I went to the Bougie Kroger's. And they had the frozen spanakopitas that I can't get at my non-Bougie Kroger's in Oak Hill.
Oh, that's right. So you got to go to out here we call the, so we have routes, right?
Yeah.
So the bougie route or the fresh fare routes. Those are the bougie routes. And of course, because I live amongst the white people, those are the routes in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they carry, you know, this Bougie Kroger's carries wine that the boys under the bridge can't open.
Right, because it actually has a cork.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, you boozy bitch, you.
And, I'm telling you, those frozen spanakopitas are the shit.
Now, what is that? Is that the pastry?
It's the phyllo pastry stuffed with spinach and feta.
Yes.
And you you dip it in the tzatziki sauce, you know, with the cucumber, with the ground cucumber and the dill and the lemon.
You know, I hate dill, bitch.
And garlic.
You know what I do?
Get over it.
Bitch, but okay, in my defense, I make, because Jan likes that, and I made some, and since I could, you know, ration out the dill, you know, the dill ratio, so I had it with just a hint of dill, and it was good. And I think I'm going to make that for her again, because I'm trying to lose weight.
And today, while I was over in Summersville, learning about the price of estradiol cipionate, I decided to take a moment and swing. It's wild. There's a little mini chain of fish places, so much better than the Captain D's or Long John Silver's, because it's kind of localish. There's like three or four of them. It's called Fish Frenzy. And it's run by some hunky Egyptian dudes.
Ooh. And like Omar Sharif?
Close. No cigar. I mean, come on, it's West Virginia.
Okay, but hey, you still got hunky Egyptians, so I'm all for that.
And girl, I thought of you because, you know, you can see them back there cooking and stuff, and I could see them putting the fillets in the fryer, and I was like, yeah. Tracy would look up and say, hotter than fish grease.
Fish grease. But before we go, sis, you know, because I sent you the latest picture of my, how bad is this going to be about, am I going to be, is there going to be discoloration, or am I going to be able to get my pigment?
No, it'll come back. It'll come back.
Girl.
Are you kidding me? If black folks stayed pale after a bad sunburn, don't you reckon black folks would have been out there getting third degree sunburns for the last 300 years in the United States?
Okay.
Michael Jackson would have been out there at Neverland Ranch in a fucking thong speedo.
Who said he wasn't?
Shut up.
You started it.
I love That's you, Tracy. I love you, Tracy. Go away. Let me upload the program.
Bye, bitch.
Bye, bitch. Bye. Oh, it's good to end on a laugh. And we spent a lot of time with the courts this evening. I've heard so much about Nitwit Nero and his Bible sales today. I just didn't have the stomach to go into it, but I'll just say this. Sooner or later, that motherfucker is going to run up against a judge who is not going to let him threaten his daughter. And Judge Juan Marchand just may be the man. So that's it. Oh, thank you, Jude. I love that. I love that hoodie. Good to hear from you. So I'm out of here. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Tomorrow, when we begin the program, we will be at $650 to finish the month of March fully funded and pay stuff like, you know, bills. Thanks to everybody who responded to Cat's challenge. Thanks to our a la carte contributors, challenge makers. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks for our all-volunteer staff. Hey, Roger, have a blast on the Oregon coast. Enjoy your time away. Enjoy NorwestCon, Theo. Spring is coming to the Great Northwest. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to each pod, like each podcast, subscribe to a couple of podcast platforms. Leave a comment here and there. Thanks so much. I do read them, and I appreciate them. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, anything you want to download, free, of course, from WhiteRoseSociety.org, please go and get it now. Because White Rose, after a quarter of a century or more, will go dark on June the 1st. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe, everybody. If you're over 65, you are recommended to get the next booster at the 4 months mark after your last one. Please wear your mask if you're around maggots, because as empirical data shows, they're prone to spread disease. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if some mouthy right-wing maggot mom from Fairfax County comes towards you babbling about how the transes are spitting on Christians, avoid Ms. Lundquist Aurora like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.